In the middle of the Tochacha, Perek Chavzayin, Pasuk Chav Aleph, as the Torah is describing the continuing deterioration, the continuing regression of Am Yisrael's commitment, of Am Yisrael's moral fiber, of Am Yisrael's theological faith, there's a very strange word that appears in Pasuk Chav Aleph, and it reappears several psukim later. The pasuk describes the Jewish people as conducting themselves in their religious affairs through keri. Ve'im telchu imi keri. If you will walk with me, if you will conduct yourself, behave with me, Hashem says, through keri, kuf resh yud, and you won't listen, then I will continue and intensify the punishment, the penalties. A few psukim later, if you continue, v'halachtem imi keri, you'll walk with me, conduct yourselves religiously with keri, then it becomes reciprocal. V'halachti af ani imachem bekeri. Then I will reciprocate and treat you with keri. A strange word to describe theology, religious experience. The general word keri is well known to us. In general, it relates to the word mikra and can refer to anything which is inconsistent, lacking any system, organization, overriding logic. It's unreasoned, it's unplanned, unscripted. So, for example, the most common association is a baal keri, a person who didn't plan, certainly not consciously, to undergo, to experience that physical phenomena, but it just happened. Mikrei Laila, as the Torah says. It describes, interestingly enough, in a very pejorative way, the inconsistent lack of, or non-systematized, or non-incorporated revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to prophets who don't really deserve, who shouldn't really be seen as prophets in the classic sense. And the conventional model is, of course, Bilam, where Vayikar Hashem El Bilam, Hashem appears to Bilam, not in the same way that he appeared to Moshe or other Nevi'im, repetitively, routine, scheduled, systematized, incorporated, institutionalized, but just here and there. And Bilam is aware of that. He says, "Vanochi ikareko." So I'll stand at a certain location, and hopefully it will happen. An event will occur which I have no control of and which can't be in any way choreographed or engineered. When Moshe wants to display his own humility, so he tries to diminish the Aleph of the Vayikra, in part to demonstrate that in his mind he wasn't deserving of institutionalized prophecy, and of course he was, and hence the dichotomy between what Moshe wanted to write to leave out the Aleph, and ultimately the Aleph is included. So the word keri in general also describes Amalek. Amalek is asher karcha baderech. They happened upon you on the way, and more or less, without getting into deeper meanings of the term, Chazal see Amalek as this band of nomads who just resided in the desert and attacked wayfaring, traveling groups and caravans. Of course, their attack of the Jewish people had deeper and darker connotations, but at the very least, they were, as we would call, they were opportunists. So the concept itself is well known, but how does it describe Am Yisrael's deteriorated, morally regressed state in Parshas Bichlokosai? So there really are three different approaches, mainstream approaches, and each of them describe a different condition of religious struggle, of religious challenge. It's important to discriminate between the three. Rashi is the easiest to get a handle on. Rashi takes the word, as we would say, in its most common application, without really extrapolating it to the particular context of Bichlokosai. Rashi describes keri, a person whose religion is inconsistent, the opposite of tamid. Rabboseinu amru aroi, inconsistent, temporary, unconditioned, lacking any routine or schedule or regulation, no regiment. She'eino ela leprakim. It's only periodic, or as we would say, episodic. There are moments of religious commitment followed by moments of religious unraveling and religious wandering. There's very little sinister about this moment, and that could be why other Rishonim avoided this approach, because Parshas Bechukosai, especially at this stage, this is the third wave of religious failure. And if you read the Tochacha carefully, it's not one holistic or organic description, but there are waves of religious failure. If you fail in your first wave, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will issue limited penalties. If there's a continued failure, the penalties will be amplified. And if there's even more failure, the carry stage, then Hashem will augment the penalty. So something which is a word like carry, which is used to describe the third wave, the third stage, it should be a little bit more diabolical. And according to Rashi, it's weak, inconsistent, lacking discipline, lacking any governing experience. The opposite of Tamid. Obviously, the great challenge of religion, to lend consistency, not just durability, not just passion, not just depth, not just spirit. But Tamid, the consistency of Tamid, the consistency of minute by minute of Avodas Hashem, and that's something which everyone searches for. How to fuse the moments, how to create links in the chain rather than these episodes of religious depth followed by moments of dryness or desiccation or lacking imagination. So it's a common challenge, but it's hard to imagine that that's the sum total of the Torah's intent, especially when you read the upcoming psukim that Hashem threatens us, that if you will treat me with keri, then I'll treat you with keri. To say that Hashem will treat us inconsistently, it doesn't sound so penal, it doesn't sound... And that's why some Rishonim, the Rambam in particular, develop a totally different idea. The Rambam, in the fifth section of Hilchos Tanis, where the Rambam describes the experience of Tanis, actually I'll read from the first parak of Tanis, it's probably more direct. The Rambam describes a special mitzvah in the Torah to daven during a moment of crisis, either personal or in this case national crisis. And according to the Rambam, this is a mitzvah in the Torah to daven based on the psukim in Bahaloscha, in Bamidbar Perak Yud, the phrase Al Hatzar Hatzorer Eschem Vayosem Bechatzatzos. Interestingly enough, the Ramban, Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman, who disagreed with the Rambam, the Ramban felt there was no biblical mitzvah of tefillah. The entire concept of tefillah is derabanan. But even the Ramban would agree, as he notes, that during a crisis there is a special mitzvah to respond in part through prayer. The Rambam, now getting back to Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, the Rambam describes the mitzvah of prayer during a crisis as part of the overall phenomena and experience of tshuva, that when a crisis afflicts us, we should be able to link that crisis to human behavior, to religious failure, and respond through prayer, confession, tshuva. So part of tshuva is acknowledging linkage, acknowledging hashkacha, acknowledging cause and effect. Events don't just occur in a vacuum. They aren't serendipitous. They don't occur by chance. But they are directly caused by our actions. And that's the first stage of tshuva. And of course, if a person wants to stave off crisis and improve, so tshuva would then compel improvement, tefillah. And then the Rambam dedicates an entire halacha, halacha gimel and perek aleph, to describing the reverse situation. Someone who isn't able to connect the dots, who isn't able to see the Yad Hashem in challenging moments. Avol im lo yizaku, person who doesn't daven, v'lo yariyu, doesn't respond. Ela yomru, but he says, davar zemi min haga olam, it's only chance, it's only circumstance, it's only fate. V'tzarezu nikra nikreis, it's only a chance event. So the Rambam actually calls this mean-spirited and cruel, not just theologically off, but cruel, because it causes people to adhere to flawed lifestyles, and those flawed lifestyles will only elicit future suffering, will only cause future suffering. And the Rambam refers to our pasuk in Parshas Bechukosai, that if you choose to view your world as keri, as circumstance and fate, rather than understanding life's events as being charged with theological messages and theological connections, you rather impute or assign these events to circumstance, to chance. If that's how you choose to view the system of your world, then Hashem says, and I'll treat you that way. Instead of extending my providential hand of Hashkacha and caring for you, I will expose you to the vicissitudes of fate, to the misfortunes of chance, to the rough and cruel eventualities that aren't governed by any larger plan or larger design. So it happens to be an interesting Rambam theologically. It suggests that the level of hashkacha a person achieves is in direct proportion to the level of hashkacha he discerns. If he's able to impute and discern the hand of Hashem and impute events to hashkacha, then he'll be privileged to a higher level of hashkacha. If he just casts caution to the wind and just assumes it all to be fate, then the greatest punishment is not Hashem's attention in a penal way, but the greater punishment is lacking any attention, where Hashem essentially removes hashkacha and submits you to the chance, serendipitous world that you assumed existed, in which there is no governing force, there is no logic, everything just comes without any larger plan. But getting back to the moral issue, the Rambam feels, and others, Rabbeinu Bechaye, feels that this pasuk in Parshas Bichlokosai doesn't describe a person who's just religiously inconsistent, who can't be disciplined, who can't be regimented in his religion, but a person who is theologically insensitive, who cannot see religious, theological, divine import in events. Events have lost all prophetic, divine meaning. They've just become banal. They've become pedestrian. They've become mundane. They've become rational. They've become empty of any vision. Who's unable to breathe religion into day-to-day events, and certainly into events that should charge us, in certain cases, shake us up. And the preferred model is one who's able to decode and to decipher and to attach religious import to events and draw messages from those events, and even when challenging or difficult events occur, to be able to translate them into personal or national failure, to associate them with personal and national failure, and then to recover and to improve. Now, what's interesting about this interpretation of the Rambam is it lets a genie out of the bottle, as we would say, because it could compel you or bring a person to a state that's both morally repugnant and also just mistaken. Bilam prides himself in being Yodea Das Elyon. He knows the ways of God. He's able to connect the dots. He's able to interpret events and understand God's purpose and reason. And the Gemara and Brachos chastise him and reprimands Bilam. And part of the reason that his donkey embarrasses him, the Gemara says, is Hashem was sending him a message. You don't even know what your donkey is thinking, and you arrogate to yourself in a ridiculous fashion to know the ways of Hashem and the will of Hashem. And Bilam is ridiculed because of his arrogance. And for us to just assume that we can interpret events on a one-to-one basis, this is why events have occurred, and this is what Hashem is thinking, and this is why he's punishing people, it's both theologically troubling to assume you can know the will of God. It's also, it can lead a person to arrogance, not just arrogance about your own ability to decipher Hashem as Bilam represented, but also moral ugliness towards others. And so often we have this divine Delphic oracles who propose to know why tragedies occur, why events happen, why people suffer, whether in the broader calculus, why the tsunami happened, why the earthquake happened, why the accident, the terrible mass accident occurred, why there's terror. And then, on the other hand, in people's personal lives. And I spoke about this a little bit, if you want to reference it, in this year's 15-minute Devar Torah about Parshas Tazria and Mitzara. And that's why, as much as Chazal want to identify the chait of Lashon Hara as the reason for tzaras, the Torah doesn't, because the Torah doesn't want us to just simply go, as we would say, flying off the handle and easily and quickly just accuse people, well, you have tzaras, and therefore you must have spoken Lashon Hara. And look, I see a rash breaking out on that person's face. He must have spoken Lashon Hara. To create the sort of witch hunt effect where we're able to immediately identify the sinners in our ranks and castigate them or excommunicate them or burn them or other extreme responses. And there's got to be a little bit of humility. It's got to be a little bit of sensitivity to other people. So where do you draw the line? How do you reach that intended attitude of the Rambam where you're able to... So obviously there are recommendations on a personal level. You're on terra firma. You're on much firmer ground where you try to understand your own life and why certain tragedies or challenges or events occur, rather than trying to play God with other people's lives. Generalities are always safer than specifics. I get a general sense that my life needs improvement, and that's the general message, the direction of my life is taking. That's why things are starting to occur, and that's obviously the more that it could be natural, not just magical. And more that I said, the reason I'm facing these challenges in my life is because of certain lifestyle naturally. If I'm wasting too much time, then I'll naturally feel unproductive and lazy and dispirited and depressed. So it's not a magical, supernatural intervention where God sends a message, but that there's a lifestyle that's creating certain, it's more of psychological than supernatural. And where do you draw the line between the two is always difficult to tell. If it can remain general rather than particular, rather than saying this happened because, sometimes that leads people into a magical view of religion. I can press this button and Hashem will respond this way. If I press that button, Hashem will respond that way. That's a very, very dangerous road to take, especially if you're not attuned to the world of Kabbalah and you don't really even understand the mechanism of cause and effect in a cosmic sense, and you're just trying to see demons and goblins where they don't exist. And again, in our world, it has to be much more experiential and rational and behavioral and psychological. But even if you feel that Hashem is sending you a message, those messages could be general towards improvement, towards greater avodas Hashem. Rav Lichtenstein used to tell us towards a greater inclination for chumrah. If you feel that Hashem is sending you a message, you have to be a little bit more careful in this area, a little bit more careful in that area. So there are some guidelines about how to interpret, as the Rambam wants us to, events in a religious tone without flying off the handle, without veering into fanaticism or moral superiority or self-righteousness and sanctimony. So it is a very, very important statement of the Rambam, but it's also a very dangerous mandate. The third, just very quickly, the third stream, which Mefarshim note, is, as the Evan Ezra quotes, in the name of others, not just inconsistency, as Rashi spoke about, or not just, as the Rambam says, a spiritually vacant view of the world, a view of the world which doesn't take prophecy or divine meaning into events, but just a person who is able to see these events as retributional, as penal, as divinely inspired, but just refuses to buckle, refuses to be defeated. The Evan Ezra talks about someone who strengthens, he quotes others, of course, who see the word carry as someone who tries to strengthen his resolve, strengthen his obstinacy, become intransigent. I won't let HaKadosh Baruch Hu take control of my life. Some others talk about, as Uncle says, someone who's a kashi, who is very strong-headed, who refuses to take heed, refuses to change lifestyle. Sometimes you have people who really are able to sense a divine purpose and a divine message and are able to connect the dots, not in the way the Rambam spoke about someone who's just become religiously insensitive or careless or carefree, but someone who really does see meaning, but for whatever reason, either in a militant way, every once in a while you've got people who in a outright, overt fashion rebel. When it's not rebellion, it's just dissonance. Disassociative dissonance, where they just disassociate from the issue, not interested in participating in that scheme, disconnect from that larger. It's a very different level, very different layer. So these are the three layers of carry. The first layer is someone who is just simply inconsistent, experiential. There's really no theological, philosophical, existential issue at hand, just unable to muster the discipline. The second, which is really the chief issue, is the Rambam, someone who doesn't translate life. It's easy to translate davening, it's easy to translate Torah, it's easy to translate mitzvahs, but can you translate life's experiences into religion? And then finally, the Evan Ezra quotes some, and the Unglis is certainly inclining in this direction, where a person is able to sense a message, but unwilling to submit to that message, and unwilling to participate in recovering from that message. Shabbat Shalom.